Assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to another episode of Coffee and Benefits with Ayub and Redbeard. How you doing this evening, huh?
Man, I'm beautiful. How about yourself?
I'm doing good, man. Just had me a little bit of Chinese tonight. We ate in, and now I'm enjoying me a cup of coffee.
What type of coffee are you working with today?
After we talked, man, I was out at Walmart and I seen this brand of Folgers. It's a Noir Midnight.
Yeah,
so I'm drinking some of that and I got a splash of caramel macchiato in that. So,
okay.
Yeah. That's how I'm doing it tonight, man.
Okay, you know me. I got the Folgers classic roast, and I tried this little peppermint mocha creamer, and it's all right. I was running from it for a minute because I could never fathom peppermint and chocolate, but this is pretty good.
Yeah, it's when I bought the coffee, I bought this creamer too, man. It's a what is it called? Nitro creamer. I told you about it. I posted on the page's Instagram. So I posted on there so you can see what it is, man. Go out and try it. It's real good, man. It makes your coffee, it makes it sweet. You don't have to use a lot of sugar. It makes it sweet. But the only thing, man, that you'll run through that can real quick, man, because it's like in a like a whipped cream can. So, yeah. Give you that real barista feel, man.
I know that's right.
So, what are we going to get into tonight, man?
Man, I don't know, man. Some of the things I know personally I've been picking up on the radar is just getting through this whole quote-unquote holiday season and just the back and forth about it and, like, how the Muslims, like, really are getting to a place where they don't love or like the reminder, and how they turn the one who gives the reminders and who enjoys the good and forbids the evil and turn them into the villain while sympathizing for the one who not only falls short, but who blatantly advertises this sort of behavior and normalize it and then become defensive and standoffish in their positions with things like "you can't judge me, worry about yourself," and or "if you don't like it, you could delete me or unfriend me, or you don't have to comment," and things of this nature. So that's been on my radar. Also, the situation that happened with the brother and the Applebee's.
Yeah, with regard to your first point, man, I really chalk a lot of that stuff up, man. So a lot of people not having like a real love or a real connection with having the Islamic identity, man. And by having that, man, it's easier for you to shun those things, man. And like for example, you know, I've been Muslim my whole life. And so when it comes to these holidays, even outside of Islam, like as a kid, like Christmas wasn't something that was in my house, and New Year's was nothing but a party and a bunch of shooting and stuff anyway.
Right.
So, but having a strong connection to that stuff, man, it's easier to stay away from those things, man.
Right.
With regards to the second point, man, that's, You know, we've been sitting back for some time, man, and we've just been watching a whole lot of things unfold, man. And it just reminds me of that saying of that famous saying of Malcolm X, man, when the rooster has come home, or what is it, when the chicken has come home, the rooster,
right,
or something similar to that. And so, you know, it's a lot of things, man. And, you know, me and my wife, we talked about it. And, you know, man, sooner or later, man, the sun is going to come out, man, and a lot of things going to be exposed, man. But like I was telling you too, also, whenever we get around to doing the episode, man, where we talk about like us being first introduced to Salafia and its current state, man. Inshallah, we can cover some of that stuff, man. Because it's important into our growth with regards to us being upon this blessed minhaj, man. So, inshallah, we can talk about that, you know.
Right.
But also, about what you had asked about in that episode, man, that we wasn't able to put up. So I was thinking we could revisit that. That's fine with you.
That's perfectly fine, because that was heavy, man.
Yeah. So in doing so, I want to bring a statement by Sheikh Salih al-Fawzan, Hafizullah. And the Sheikh, he says, the most dangerous affair upon this Ummah right now are the ignorant callers who don't know knowledge, and they call people with ignorance and misguidance. And as much as we talk about or complain or vent our frustrations about our current state of affairs with regards to the Salafi Ummah, one of the fortunate things that we have in our favor, man, is that we know that the brothers, they come with authentic knowledge.
Right.
That can be traced. Right. So we may not like or may not agree with a particular personality at the moment, but we know that the knowledge that they're disseminating is authentic and can be traced back.
Right.
So we have that, you know, in our favor. But in a lot of these communities, you don't have such access to knowledge. Or if you do have it, or if they have it, then they tend to hoard this knowledge. Right? And they'll use it as a means to, like, use it against the people, rather than giving them this knowledge to help them reach the hereafter. They use it as a means to get things and to get over on people. And like I explained to you, is when I first moved down here. And I remember when I first moved down, my wife and her cousin, along with his wife, came and picked me up. And so on our way back, the brother is happy. He's like, man, I heard about you, man. They say you got knowledge and we're happy because the community needs you and so on and so forth, right? So he informs the people of this particular masjid that's in my locality. And like Ford, they make the conversation smooth without using people's names. We'll just give some nicknames just so we can kind of flow without it making it confusing.
Right.
So at this masjid, there's a guy who runs the masjid, and we'll call him Ibn Muhammad, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the guy, Ibn Muhammad, has a well-known reputation for being corrupt and being a womanizer, and he has no knowledge of the deen, right? But because the person is well-spoken, he got some kind of notoriety in the area because he used to be inside of the music industry. And so he used to accompany some of the well-known rappers and stuff like this. And, you know, his father has a little bit of money, so he had a name around town, right? But during those times, he wasn't practicing Islam, right? And so when he decided to come and started to practice Islam, his father is the imam of the masjid, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, these are people who want to establish Islam, right? We in this area, it doesn't have a large Muslim population amongst the blacks. Like here we have a lot of Yemenis here, and we have a lot of like Indians here. but mainly Yemenis are in this area, like at the corner stores and things like this.
Right.
And you know how it is with the foreigners sometimes when they come here, they can be kind of standoffish with the community and with regards to how they interact.
Right.
So when they're trying to establish the masjid, Ibn Muhammad's father is the one who established the masjid. Now, he's not a person of learning, never went off and studied. When it comes to like reciting Quran and so on and so forth, they can't do it properly, but they wanted to establish Islam, right? They wanted to have a masjid somewhere for the people to pray. Now, this is important to note. When you have somebody who has this kind of manipulative mindset, right, where his father is looked at as the leader of the Muslim community because he established a masjid and he took the realm as imam, right? And we know the imams are going to be looked at as the head of the Muslim communities. So you come in from a situation where you be in an Islam, like, and you come into a situation where your father is the leader of this community, right? And so it's easy for you to take the helm. And this is what he did, right? So Ibn Muhammad is the one who gives the khutbah, sees the dealings of the masjid, and so on and so forth like this. So, but he has this real bad reputation. Now, I'm in Virginia, right? And I'm not always in the inner circles of the administration of the masjid and stuff like that, being that I'm friends with a lot of the brothers at the masjid that happen to be on administration. A lot of things I'm kind of privy to, right? But this incident is just widespread. Like, anybody knows about this, right? And my wife is from this area, and she's friends with, or was friends with, the guy's wife. So one of the incidents where his wife tried to commit suicide. And what was going on is that he's just playing around with the sister, man, playing with her emotions, cheating on her, taking second wives, divorcing women, taking wives, divorcing women. And and this is what he told me personally, what happened. He divorced her. And during the Iddah period, he goes back to her for relations. And, you know, she's taking that as she's back together, right? And he just tells her, like, no, nah, we're not back together. You know, I was just horny. I wanted to get my rocks off. And he just storms out of the house again. And, you know, the sister is affected dramatically, man. And she took a bunch of pills and tried to commit suicide, man. And from that sister ended up leaving Islam, like, goes completely back to kufr. Celebrate all of the holidays and everything, man. And it even got to a point, because after this situation, my wife was and my wife can, you know, tries to encourage her and lets her know that Islam is connected to the man and things of this nature. But, you know, all she sees is what she was accustomed to. And that's an important point too, man, with regards to, you know, how it is sometimes, man, where you think that a person will enter into Islam because, you know, they found it to be truthful and they have love for Allah and they have love for the messenger. But the reality of some of these situations is that the women enter into Islam for the man, or a man may enter into Islam for the woman. And so when those relationships sour, so does their Islam, right? But these are some of the things, man. And the brother, and I remember talking to someone, man, and they're telling me, man, that, you know, he would tell the people that there are no scholars alive, right? No real scholars alive. And that, you know, anytime a person mentioned something regarding Salafia, then he would say, you know, that's a cult. You can't break into sex, you know, and things of this nature, right? He would misuse ayahs from the Quran in order to sleep with women that was under his charge, where he's supposed to be the wali of these women. And if he, you know, liked a particular woman, he would tell her what Allah says in the Quran, that lawful to you are your wives and what your right hand possesses. And he would take the women as the concubine and things like this. And when you have a situation where you have people who aren't knowledgeable about Islam, don't know the basics. And if we're being honest, this is a situation of a lot of people.
Yeah.
That suffice themselves with, you know, listening to khutbahs and listening to lectures and stuff like this, but don't really take the time to, you know, bunker down and study and learn things for themselves, right? Because a person could tell you that, but it would have been easy to open up Tafsir Ibn Kathir. That's one of the most widespread Tafsir that's in English. Could have easily went in to Ibn Kathir and looked that up, right? Because I even had questions about that ayah growing up, right? Because I'm thinking your right hand possession is your slave, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm saying to myself, well, you know, nowadays we don't have slaves. But if I get a maid, then my maid is just like my slave, right? That's my servant. She's going to do what I say. And I could just, you know, hit that when I wanted to. Get me a nice Brazilian maid or something like that. And when I wanted to, you know. But, you know, when you look into the situation, you find out that's a war captive.
Right.
Right. And if the situation doesn't, we're not in war times, so no one is being taken as captive. Right. So that doesn't apply. Right. You don't even apply it. It's not applied. Right.
Right.
But these are some of the things. And like Sheikh Fauzan pointed out, man, that you have these ignorant callers. Right. They get on the minbar. Right. With a whole bunch of people that don't know the language, and they do a whole remix of Kutbah Tahajjud. They do a whole remix of the verses of Allah, right? That when you sit back and you listen to them, there's no way you can say that these are even ayat,
right?
Because the person's makhraj is just so horrible, man. And like I say, the people gonna take it from you, right? I can't dispute you about something that I don't even know myself, but I look at you as knowledgeable and I gotta accept that from you. Right. So boom. My wife cousin, you know, he tells the people that, you know, we got somebody with knowledge in the community. He can help the community, so on and so forth like this. And so, one of the things that brought me here, outside of just being with my wife, her brother passed away, Rahimullah. And he was married to a woman who was a kufar. And one of the things was that, you know, kind of some stir up is that he was Muslim and she was kufar and his family is kufar. And so when their son dies, they're gonna, you know, handle that situation how they deem fit, right? And this is another side note, man. It goes back to something I said earlier about, you know, having a love for this Islamic identity, man. Being Muslim and being proud. You wouldn't take a kafir for a wife, man. Yeah. You wouldn't do it for these reasons, man. Right? Amongst other things, and the kids and so on and so forth. But whatever the case may be. So that was the situation where I came down, you know, to comfort my wife during that situation. And so the masjid hears about the incident of the brother being having a funeral in a church and so on and so forth like this. So when I come to the masjid that day after the khutbah, they had did a community meeting. And in the community meeting, the imam, we'll call him Abu Muhammad, right? The imam Abu Muhammad was giving a talk. And he was saying, like, you know, one of our brothers who was close to our community, he just passed away. And, you know, they buried him like a Christian. And we need to teach our children. And so the first thing that we're going to do is we're going to teach our children the Arabic language. We're going to have Arabic classes and like this. And this is my first Jummah there. So, you know, I kind of put my hand up and say to him, like, that I don't think that should be your starting point if you want to prevent this from happening. Because just like simply learning the language isn't going to protect your children, because they may run into a Christian who knows Arabic or whatever, and they'll still be taught that falsehood. They'll just learn it in Arabic, right?
Right. Like an Oriental. I think right. That's what they call them, yeah.
Right, an Orientalist. And so, you know, I tell them, like, you should start with teaching your kids Tawheed and so on and so forth. And so he says to me, like, you want to do it? And I'm like, nah, man, I just got here. Like, this is my you know, I'm here. But, you know, the deen is nasiha. So I just gave, you know, you some advice, man, on the way that you should take. So I end up talking to the brother, Ibn Muhammad. And, you know, I didn't say anything about his ways. Like I say, I'm new here, and I don't want to come and kick up dust or none of that. That's not my intention. But I come from a place where I was connected to that masjid, right?
Right.
And so I still want to keep this up, man. Like, I love the being in a masjid, man. I love being around the Muslims. But I'm with these, and I just feel it. Like, yo, Ak, you should see the masjid, man. Like, they... Like, there's no women's section. They got a TV. listen. Right, boom. When you come in a masjid, you come in, and then there's the musalla, right? Then they have, like, a sitting area off to the musalla, right? And straight to the back of the masjid, they got, like, a sectional couch. And they had so the sectional couch, this is the sister's area, the sectional couch. Had a TV on a stand over there. We had some DVDs, you know, The Messenger, Story of Bilal, like, you know, stuff like this sitting in the masjid. And I'm like, yo, this is wild, right? So I'm, and it's crazy, man, because, you know, sometimes the Salafis get this, you know, this bad rap for being strict and stuff like that, right? But mm-hmm. Some things, like, man, you just ain't got no cut card for it, man. So when you come, I'm like, yo, where's the sister side at? Right? Because my wife can't come in here. Like, you know, where's the sister side at? He's like, right there. Like, yo, man, y'all got to do something about that, man. Y'all got to put a barrier up or something, man.
Right.
And alhamdulillah, we end up, you know, screening off a section for the sisters and stuff like this. So... as the weeks come, like, I'm befriending the guy, and you need a part of me. So in the weeks to come, I befriend the guy, and you know, we just start talking, man, and I'm trying to hip them to stuff, man. And what ends up happening is they let me do some classes in the masjid. And before this, they pull up on me and they're like, listen, man, you know, you just moved here. You ain't got a job yet. So what we'll do, we'll pay you to hold the classes and to do some stuff in the masjid, right? And so I'm like, all right, let me, you know, talk to somebody, you know, some of my companions. So I end up calling Raha, and I'm telling him, like, yo, The masjid that I go to, they pull up on me. They ask about teaching classes and stuff like this, and they say they'll pay me and stuff like this. But I ain't, you know, I ain't cut from that cloth. I don't got no knowledge like that to be teaching no classes or whatever. And so Raha is asking me some background, like, who's the imam? Who is this? And so when I tell him, he says, "Ah, listen, just take your family and move, yo. Says, just move away, right?" He was like, "Is there somewhere else you can go?" And I'm like, you know, me and my wife had been talking about, like, moving to Ohio and stuff like that. He's like, "Yes, go to Ohio. There's Masjid Sahaba there. There are good Salafis there." But I'm like, "Ah, I just moved down here, and I ain't got the ends to just hop up and go nowhere." You know what I'm saying? And so I talked to some of my other companions. I had a companion that was in Riyadh, real close to me. And so I called him. I talked to him. I explained the situation. And he's just like, just be gentle and call the people to Tawheed. If they're letting you call to Tawheed and they're not upon what they're letting you call to Tawheed, then don't call the people. And so this was the route that I took, you know, after Juma. And I think on Wednesday night, I would read from Sheikh Uthaymeen's explanation of Usul Thalatha. And a lot of the brothers would bring their kids, and they were receptive to it, man. They were receptive to it. And so, you know, sometimes the brothers would try to fight me on some stuff, man. But when you just bring them the book, man, and they can't fight the truth that way. But back to the guy Ibn Muhammad, like the guy is, in my estimate, like a real life predator, especially when it comes to the women. He got a real bad rep with the women, man. And they seem to flock to him, man. You know, he's not a bad looking guy. And like I say, he got influence and stuff like that. And at this point, I had been there about 6 months or 7 months. And the brother had just been going through the women, man. Get married to a sister, divorce a woman. And, you know, he just had these real shady tactics, man. And, like, listen, these two occasions, man, that I had the opportunity to have firsthand knowledge of. He married this one sister from Baltimore. And when he gets his sister down, like I told you before, like, you know, he takes their vehicles or they leave their vehicles. He furnishes a vehicle. He furnishes their cell phones. Anywhere they go is like he's the one to do it. Like they don't work or anything. And so they're always at home. And, you know, if he catches them doing something that they don't like, he just turns the phone off or whatever. So one day while he's at work, the woman done, you know, came up with an escape plan, man. And so, excuse me, she trashes the brother's house on the way out, though. Like, just bleach all his furniture, bleaches his carpet, all his clothes. She took all his electronics, his TV, his PlayStation. She took all the brother books. She took all his books. She took all the brother books, right? And she hightailed out of there, man. And she got away from him. And there was another sister that he married that was from Greensville. And that's the same thing. He came home one night and she was gone. He said, he telling me this. I don't know where she went. Right. I come home one day, she gone. The little telephone that he gave her was left on like one of the tables in the house. And the sister hightailed out of there. No cooler, no divorce. She just got out of there. Right. Because maybe she's been in relationships, man, and she sees certain patterns and she know that this is going to be bad and she got out of there. Man.
Right.
And but like I told you before, I had been down there in the span of 4 to 6 months, man. And within that 4 to 6 months, the brother had been married at least 10 times, man. And that's really unprecedented. Now, listen, you say 10 times, right? Well, the brother can have up to four wives, right? So if you marry four and you divorce three at the same time, and then you bring in another three, and then you might divorce one, the math could add up, right?
Yeah, sure can.
But if you only marry in one, if you only marry in one, and you're at 10 divorces, like, you know, really, somebody isn't doing something right, man. And after he had divorced one sister, man, he asked me to accompany him on a trip. We had went down to Greensboro. They have a halal market down there, so we went down there to pick up some food and stuff. And while we're riding, man, I just say to him, you know, because he's telling me the story about how the woman ran off and stuff. And so I'm saying to him, I'm like, why don't you just not get married for a while and take some time and try to do an assessment of, like, what's going on, man? Because you've been married a lot, man. And he's like, nah, you know, if I marry a woman and she doesn't do it how I wanted to do it, I'm getting rid of her. And I'll just get somebody else, right? He come home and his sister watching TV or something like that, she getting divorced. But, you know, marriage can't be like that, you know, because there's a lot of things that come along with marriage, man. And alhamdulillah, he didn't have any children by any of these women in the, you know, the short span that he was married. But he wouldn't take that advice. So one time he calls me up and he was like, yo, I want you to do my marriage, right? So I'm like, all right, I'll do it. So boom, I get to the masjid. It's me, him, his father, another brother. I can't remember his name, but another brother was there. Right? So it's just us four. And so I'm explaining to him, in order for a marriage to be sound, then there are four things that need to be met. Right? So you need the consent of the woman, or you need the wali, rather, right? You need a wali, you need a marriage contract, you need a dowry, and the fourth one is escaping me right now. But the only thing that he had was a
woman.
Right. So I'm asking, where's the wali, right? And he points to the brother that's sitting there, the one whose name I can't remember, right? And I'm like, how does he know her, right? We just made him the wali. And I'm like, Ak, you can't do that, man. You just can't make the, like, listen, man. And this is the play that they run, right? This is, and this is what I was talking about in the beginning, right? Where you have people that they don't know, right? A woman, she enters into Islam, man. She want to practice her deen. Right. And then you say, sister, you need to be married. And then she say, OK, well, this brother right here is going to be your wali. That's the first day she ever seen the guy, the day that you told her. Right. And even leading up to that, man, everything, nothing was above board. Right. So that's the play that they run down there, man. They'll see a sister.
So let me ask you a question.
OK.
Based to the best of your knowledge, what type of women were these, like, women of low self-esteem? Was he like preying on like really weak women, or did he just have that little gift of gab, that little deceptive magical type speech or ways with him?
From what I know about him, like in my dealings with him, he's not eloquent in speech. He's confident in his speech. And sometimes, you know, that gives an aura that, you know, a self-sure guy, you know, got his stuff together. A lot of that stuff hold weight. But in terms of his speech, he wasn't eloquent. And from what I know, he meets a lot of them on Facebook. Right? He doesn't marry women from his locality. Right? He might meet a sister in Philly. Right? And he'll talk to her. And, you know, you can gauge a person just from how much they talk to you in the inbox. You see what I'm saying? So you'll know whether a person is strong and being is strong and ill by your interactions. And so, like, I never got a chance to meet any of the women to know whether or not, you know, they had low self-esteem or anything. But I do know that that was his play from Facebook or something like this, right? He told me once that he was the wali of a few sisters in a neighboring city in Fayetteville. He was the wali of some sisters like that. I remember him showing me some sisters on Facebook, telling me if I wanted to take a second, he could hook me up and all of this kind of stuff. But yeah, that's the play that they run. So they'll make one brother the wali of the sister, and they'll just do the marriage like that. Yeah, and so I'm telling the brother, like, yo, you can't do that, man. Right? That's not even correct. You need certain things, and this guy can't be her wali. Right? He ain't even an imam. Like, his father, at least, right, from the standpoint of him just being the head of the community, quote unquote head of the community, right? And so that way, when they don't have any Muslim relatives, man, at least you got that. But then he's not going to do the proper vetting for her. He's not going to warn her of his son's bad behavior and or none of this stuff like that. And so now, so I'm still doing like the classes down there. And I would give the khutbah. After a while, I just tried to monopolize it, right? Just try to keep on being the one that would do the khutbah to keep him from doing the khutbah, right? Uh-huh. And I remember one time they gave this khutbah, and I'm trying to remember the ayat that he based his khutbah off of. Allah only commanded you that you establish the prayer and you pay zakah to the end of the ayah. Wallahu a'lam. But that was the basis of it. And so all he was saying is that all you need to do to be a Muslim is to pray and give the zakah, right? And he kept emphasizing, all you need to do is pray and give the zakah, right? And he started off as like, you got this illness that's gonna affect the Jum'ah of the day, where everybody is breaking up into sex and stuff like this, and all you need to do is pray and pay the zakah. And so afterwards, you know, I'm saying, listen, what you said is correct, right? From the standpoint of Allah says, you know, establish that prayer and pray the zakah. But for you to tell the people that's all you have to do, man, is kind of misleading, right? Because nowhere in the talk did you put any kind of emphasis on learning and establishing Tawheed. None whatsoever did you make that, you know, a focal point. And this is real sickness nowadays, man, that you have people without knowledge, man, that's standing at the helms and they're disseminating what they feel and what they think, right, based on their thoughts and their desires, and they're giving people what they think is Islam. You got a guy that is a habitual womanizer standing at the minbar, admonishing you, man. He's doing all kinds of creepy stuff, man. Let alone the reputation that he has even outside of the Muslims. Like I told you, my wife was friends with his wife, right? And she knows all kinds of stuff about this guy, man. You know, I'm not gonna, you know, repeat any of it, man. But
yeah,
and it's bad. And And so, like I was telling you before, you know, I'm talking to some of the students that I know, and I'm like trying to send out the SOS, man. I'm like, yo, they kind of opening the doors up for me, man. Like, they're not giving me any kind of feedback on nothing that I'm saying. They're not trying to.
It's no resistance.
Yeah, none. None, right? So I go to Abu Muhammad, the imam, and I say, hey, man, what do you think about me bringing some brothers down and doing a conference? He's like, yeah, whatever, man. Whatever you want to do, man, I'll support it, man. I'll even give you some money to help put the brothers up if they need to be put up or whatever, right? So I'm talking to some of the students that I know, and so some of them is just like, nah, I, you know, my itinerary is full. You know, the brothers are still telling me, just go ahead and get out of there, right? Just run while you can. And just one of my companions that's in Philly, brother by the name of Naeem, Hafidhullah Ta'ala, I asked him, I'm like, all right, won't you come down? Me and you set up a little conference, man. You know, they open it up for us, man, to call the people, man. In this area, we need it, right? So he was like, okay. And we set up a time. But then he had got another job, man, and his job called for him to go out of state or something like that. So he plugged me in with another brother who was closer, because he would have been coming from Philly. And so the brother that he plugged me with was in Carolina, not too far away. So he gives me his number. I call the brother up, man, and, you know, over the phone we used to kick it. We even started, you know, classes amongst ourselves where we would call up and we would review and go over things together. And so he explains to me how he has a companion who's in the Sudan, because the brother was planning on going to Sudan himself. So he says how he has some companions who are in Sudan and they are connected with the Mashiach of the Sudan. And it would be nice for him to plug us in on that, right? And so we end up setting up this conference. And so we had the Sheikh, Adam Najiri, who was going to do the Telelink that day. And he also agreed to give classes twice a week. And that the brother would do the translations for the classes. And so when we picked the brother up, we had it set up. The brother did a good job, man. We covered the book by Sheikh Fawzan, dealing with the hadith of Mu'adh ibn al-Jabal, radiallahu an. And now, so, you know, that was set up, man. I had the flyers. I was looking for the flyers and everything, man. I had the flyers set up, man. I went and downloaded one of them little apps, man. I made flyers. I spread the word, everything, man. And like I was telling you, we had gotten brothers from the neighboring cities, Fayetteville, and there's a city called Conway in South Carolina that's not too far. We had brothers come, right? We spread it, man. And we had a lot of people in the masjid that day, man. And so we did the conference. Now, they got a connection with a guy. And we're going to call him Sheikh Fulani, because they call him Sheikh. So we're just going to call him Sheikh Fulani.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, and I met the Sheikh a couple times before that. Right? So I remember my first time meeting him, you remember the guy, Saeed Adley?
Yeah.
Okay, so there, Sheikh Fulani, he's normally in that area with Saeed Adley. And I think Adley is in South Carolina, I believe. Regardless, that's who their Sheikh normally is around that community, right?
Right.
So one day he had came up from there, and I met him in the masjid. And so when I'm speaking to him, I'm telling him that, you know, I just moved from Virginia. We got a nice community down there. The brother Raha was the imam down there. And he would just, he shot a shot, man. When I was like, Raha, he was like, you mean the translator, right? And it was an underhanded shot. Huh? You could just feel it. He was like, you mean the translator? I was like, yeah, the brother, you know, he translates for some of the scholars. And we got classes set up with Sheikh Muhammad Akkor and Fuad Amri and so on and so forth like this. And, you know, so we had a few dealings. And so back to the conference now, you know, after the conference is over, the brother, Amir, is sitting at the table. Mm-hmm. And like, we're about to serve food and stuff like that. So I remember texting their brother, was like, they're going to be serving food after you finish. So once he finished, the brother, Ibn Muhammad, comes up and he hands him his cell phone, right? And he was like, the Sheikh wants to talk to you. And so while he's on the phone, you know, they're talking and they begin their conversation in Arabic, you know, Salamu alaikum, alaikum salam, kayfa halik, hayakum Allah, and kether with kether like this, man. They're having their little conversation. And right, so I'm sitting in front of the table and you can just kind of see that brother's facial expressions change, man. His face went from pleasant to angry, right? And if the brother was like light skinned or white, you would have been able to see the anger all in his face, man. Like, he would have just completely changed colors, huh? And so he starts to say, like, yo, we can call Hassan right now. We can call him right now. Why don't you say that to Hassan, right? And they just start having this back and forth, right? And so he says to Ibn Muhammad, like, take this phone, man. Get this guy out of my ear like this, right? And so I'm like, yo, what happened? What are you saying? He's like, man, he's trying to badmouth the brothers, man. He's talking about he was down in Yemen with Hassan and Hassan this. And, you know, because like, you know, because he told me, the Sheikh, he told me personally that he studied in Dimash with Sheikh Mukbil and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So obviously he was in Yemen at the time with Hassan Sumali and Abu Hassan Malik and the rest of them brothers from here that was in Yemen, right? So he was down there with them. So he may, you know, had some dealings with them. And to me, man, when the situation unfolded, that's what it seemed like. Like, he had a gripe with them brothers for whatever reason, right? And so you cannot expect, this is just like me and you've been friends forever, right? And I'm hanging out with a guy, and he might say something like, oh, Red Bill, that joker, right? And I may not take it no way, right? Because you might be a joker to him. So, you know, I ain't going to take it that way. But now the next time I'm with him, he's starting to talk crazy about you. Oh, Red Beard, this Red. I'm a feel away, man, because I know you, right?
Right, right.
And what you're saying about him ain't what I know. So, of course, I'm going to defend your honor. And you cannot fault the brother for coming to Hassan Somali defense or whatever, right? Because he knows a particular way of Hassan, and that's what he knows. And to otherwise, I'm standing on what I know.
Right.
And so right. We're asking Ibn Muhammad, like, yo, man, what's up with your man? Yo, he our guest, man. We brought him down here, man. You give him the phone, man, and dude going in on him. Like, how he even know what was said? How he even know Hassan Somali name was even mentioned, right? And the brother is just like, I don't know. And I'm like, nah, bro. Yo, we didn't broadcast it. Like, the telelink wasn't broadcasted anywhere because the brother emphasized that. Like, wow. I don't want to be recorded. I'm not a student of knowledge, man. I'm just trying to help the community. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. So for this information, for whatever was said to have got to this guy, that's down in South Carolina, somebody had to transmit it to him, right? And that's y'all shit, right? So later that night, I called Raha and I asked him, I'm like, you know, Fulan? And he was like, when I mentioned Fulan to him, he showed me, he asked me, was I talking about a brother that's from Philly, right? And they share the same first name, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm like, nah. So he was like, you mean the one that's blind, right? So mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, that's him. He was like, ah, avoid that dude like the Ebola, right? Like avoid dude like the Ebola virus, right? So the next day, or the next time I'm at the masjid, because I live kind of far away, so I'm not at the masjid every day, but at least 3 or 4 days out of the week, I'm there, right? Mm-hmm. So the next time I'm in the masjid, I show Abu Muhammad the text that I got from the brother, right? I'm like, yo, this is the guy y'all be dealing with. I talked with the brother. This is what he said about him, right? And so his dad is like, Abu Muhammad is like, listen, man, I really don't know a lot about, you know, this Salafi stuff. That's what he say. I don't know a lot about the Salafi stuff. But I'm trying to learn, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't want to get caught up in this, right? Because, you know, I know this guy. And then you showing me this where they're saying this about him. Like, I don't know, right? So the next time I'm in the masjid, immediately after this, right? Probably the next day after I had that conversation with Abu Muhammad and I showed him the text, Raha called me up, right? No, I'm going a little bit too far. So boom, I come to Juma, and now that Sheikh is there, right? Sheikh Fulani is at the masjid. And when I get there, I was late for Juma, right? So I was only able to pray. I didn't catch the khutbah, but I caught the prayer. Right. So Fulani is sitting down, and he's talking on the phone, man. And whoever he's talking to, man, he laughing it up. And he's just laughing on the phone like, yeah, I got him. I got him this time. I'm about to head up to Detroit, and I'm about to talk to Abdul Rahman. I got him. They was trying to take over the masjid. And he says my name, and he says the brother Amir's name, right? Because he says Ayub from the town, from North Carolina. And he says the brother Amir is from Virginia, right? And the brother wasn't from Virginia. But I hear him mention, I'm sitting in front of him. And like I told you, the brother can't see. So I'm sitting right in front of him, right? And he's like, yeah, I got him. I'm about to head up there now. When I leave here, I'm heading up to Detroit. So I say to him, Salamu alaykum, ya Sheikh. And he's like, man hadha, right? Say, Heather, are you? Right? And then he's like, what did he say? The Ayub that called me an innovator? I was like, I never said that you was an innovator. Right? And then he's just start like, don't talk to me. Right? And then he's just start, you know, going heavy in Arabic. Right? And so he's like, what did I say? Right? And I'm like, look, man, I ain't going back and forth with you over that. You just said on the phone about me something that wasn't true, right? And he's like, well, if you don't know Arabic, man, then don't talk to me. And I'm like, ah, we ain't even got to deal with what you just said, man, because you said something about me that's not truthful, right? And so we end up having a back and forth, and they come and usher the brother out of the masjid. And so I'm heated because like no one is hearing what I'm saying. Like they're all just crowded around their shit and they're taking them all. And I just, you know, go home. I go home. You know, I'm talking to my wife about it or whatever. And so later that night, Raha hit me up on WhatsApp and was like, call me. And so when I called him, he's like, when was the last time you been to that masjid? And I was like, man, I ain't been back in a couple, you know, like a week or so. Because after that situation, the following Juma, I didn't even go, right? So he was like, well, why does this guy have a refutation against Rashid Barbie and Omar Quinn? And he mentions your name on there, right? So I'm like, I'm blown right now. Like, what do you mean? There's a rut out and they got my name in it. Like, what's going on? Right? And so me and my wife, we tracked this quote unquote reputation down. And so when I listen to it, he comes off by saying that Rashid Barbie had told people that he was an innovator. He's worse than scum on someone's boot, right? That's the exact quote, right?
Hold on, pause for a second. Hey, the Muslims know how to put those words together like no other. He's worse than the scum on someone's boot.
Yeah, but the crazy part is, like, I don't know where he got that from, man.
All right, but go ahead. He said that the reputation said that Rashid Barbary said that the brother is worse than scum on this boot.
Yeah, and then he just started going in, man. He just started going in. And he says that he talked to Abdul Rahman Omeysan, right? Because I told you that's where he said he was going, to Detroit to talk to him. And he said he went and talked to Abdul Rahman and... Abdul Rahman told him, like, to just be easy, right? And that if he had to use names, then use names, but he didn't prefer that he would do that, right? So he didn't take the high road. He went on, and he was, like, going in on Rashid, going in on Omar Quinn. And I don't know how – and this is what I was saying about, like, the guy already had a gripe against these people. And when one door was open, he took that door and ran with it, right? Mm-hmm. Because I don't have a connection with Rashid Barbie. I know the brother. I met him a few times. But, like, I don't have a connection with him. I don't have his phone number. Never tried to get his phone number. Outside of seeing Omar in the conferences and stuff like that, you know, when he came to Norfolk, I spoke to him and hung out with him, gave him a book and stuff from my library and stuff like that. But I don't have no real connection with them, right?
Right.
And plus, neither one of them was mentioned, right? During that conference, Hassan Somali was only mentioned because the brother was saying how the Salafis tried to connect in terms of each masajid having a connection with the next, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you needed something, you could call and someone could come and they would teach classes. And he was saying, like, I know this brother. And if things go well here, maybe I could get him to come down. Right. That's even how Hassan got mentioned. Right. So, but he was the only brother that was mentioned, not Rashid, not Raha, not Omar, none of them. So, I'm peeved. Now I'm calling Ibn Muhammad. This dude won't even answer my phone, right? Me and Amir, because Amir was going in on why he was down there, right? And, you know, he just made that whole, he's like, look, Ark, you should get there and leave. Like, listen, Ark, I had did a fundraiser for the masjid, like to get books in the masjid, right? I had gotten books sent from Saudi Arabia. My brother donated me 20 volume Tafsir Tabari, and I gave it to the master. He gave that to me amongst the other books that he had sent. He gave me that personally. He says, this is for you. Keep it, right? But I still decided to donate it to the masjid, right? And I just did that fundraiser, and I got books to come in. Only thing that I had asked from the masjid was that the brother from Saudi was just asking for money for shipping and customs, right? Which he probably would have sent, would have been the equivalent of maybe $700 if you would have bought those books in the States, right? Mm. And all the money for the shipping probably was around $75, right? And so the brother Amir is like, yo, man, if I was you, I'd go in there, I'll get all of them books that you helped get in there, and I, boom, I get out of there, right? Don't deal with these people, man. These people don't want good, man. And so the next morning, my wife comes after we listen to this refutation. My wife comes with and shows me this Facebook post where this sister's talking about she's seen in a masjid where the brothers had slandered two of our callers, and she just went on and on and on, man. You know how you read something, man, and they don't even got to say your name, but you know exactly what this is, right?
Yeah.
And so I send the sister a friend request, and not even about 20 minutes or so after me sending their friend request, their brother Ibn Muhammad called me. And I told you, since that whole incident happened, when I would call him, he wouldn't take my call. When I would text him, he wouldn't return my text, right? And so this day he calls me. He's like, I got the Sheikh on the three-way. Do you want to talk to him, right? So I'm like, yeah, I'll talk to him. And when I'm talking to him, he's like, yo, did you send a friend request to someone? And I know that he connected to this woman, man, because it wasn't even a good 20 minutes afterwards, right? And so he's like, yo, you send a friend request to my wife, and you know how we don't do the free mixing, whether it's online or in person. And I'll tell you the irony of the phone call. If you was to look at the sister's friend list, she don't got nothing but men on there. You know? But the brother can't see, so he don't know. Right? But so obviously when she got the request, she told him about it, and then he called. Because other than that, the brother really don't know. Because she got men on there.
Hold up. So you talk about the blind brother wife.
Right.
She informs this brother of what's taking place. And he's like, nah, you can't be intermingling.
Right.
But the whole time, he can't see that his wife got that but brother.
Right. Yeah, man.
It's a pan of law.
So we end up not really, we just keep going back and forth, man, because he keeps saying that I told him that Rashid Barbie. And I asked him, right, who told you this? Right? He says, I got it from a reliable source. And so then I'm like, you talking about Ibn Muhammad? That's your reliable source? Like, one, I didn't say that. But there's no way that you can take this man's word to be truthful, man. And I'm telling the Sheikh, I said, listen, if I was to tell you right now things that I know about him, there's no way that you would take this man to be truthful. And he hears about him. He hears about him because that's the main reason, in all honesty, why he comes down there. Because he heard about that guy's corruption, man. And he came and he tried to do the same thing that I was trying to do, man. Just bring you some good, man. Call to Allah and the messenger, man. Right? But from his vantage point, he sees that somebody is trying to uproot the masjid and take it over. I live down there, man. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm just doing the best that I can in my capability, right? I ain't got no, and wallahi, y'all, wallahi, that ain't never come in my mind. Like, we got to take this thing over and overrun it with Salafis and get these Muqtadis out of here. Like, that ain't never come in my mind.
But see, the thing with that brother in particular, this sheikh, and the first time I got hip to him when he was doing some things on the internet with a couple of other brothers.
Right.
And from to the best of my knowledge, those brothers fell out with another group of brothers was because they wasn't recognized, nor was they kind of like accepted. So, so when that brother in particular, the sheikh, when he heard the name Hassan, he got triggered. Like, all logic, all reason, all rationality fled. Like, the brother probably just saw red, and he was just like, no pun intended.
Hey, listen. Sometimes some people feel like, because, like I told you, I met the brother, right? Mm-hmm. And the brother is blind. Mm-hmm. And so where you may have a deficiency in one place, Allah raise you in another place, right?
Right.
And although the brother couldn't see, man, the brother got
a great error,
an astonishing memory, man, right? He knows the Quran. Like, I ain't sitting here trying to, you know, take none from him. He knows the Quran, and he knows how to keep it.
But the thing is, and this isn't to question this brother heart integrity or sincerity, but like, when you see an individual who Allah has blessed with an abundance, and they just have all of this, but then when something, like, if the people don't accept you, then alhamdulillah. If it's this, then alhamdulillah. But to just fly into, like, this whole emotional storm.
Like, yeah, but that's what I'm getting at, right? Because a person may feel that, and Allah knows best, a person may feel that because they have, quote-unquote, more knowledge than a particular person, they don't feel like that person of lesser knowledge should have reached the kind of status that they got, right? And like you say, that could have been it. You see what I'm saying? Because if there's good that's happening in a place where no good was happening, then you should be happy. Because some of the places to this day can't even get teleleaks with any kind of mashiach.
Exactly.
You see what I'm saying? And that ain't never been done there, man. Listen, right where the masjid is at, right? Excuse me. Right where the masjid is at is a little corner store. And like I told you, a lot of the Yemenis have the corner stores. Them Yemenis wasn't coming to the masjid, man.
Listen. When y'all did the conference, the brother wasn't there.
No.
He wasn't, right? He was where he was wherever he was at, right?
Right.
So soon as he heard that name, he flew down that joint.
He called in.
He probably didn't know who all was there, so he had to go see for himself. The only reason why he called in was because somebody mentioned that name. Somebody named Hassan, or he probably was Hassan. Hassan. Yeah. Fulan. Yeah, I come. Yeah. Put him on the phone. I need to talk to somebody.
And so that situation had come to a head, right? So what happened is, boom, after he do his little refutation and whatever, him and Rashid Barbie meet up, right? Because after he did his tape, his refutation, he put out what happened when him and Rashid Barbie met up. And so when him and Rashid Barbie met up, Rashid just tells him, like, yo, whoever told you that, they lied, because I don't know that brother and I ain't talked to that brother, right? Which is the truth. But at the same time, what he's going on is a lie that was attributed to me, something that I never said. And so the brother Amir, he went to Rashid. He went to him. He didn't call him on the phone or anything, right? Because when I talked to Raha, I told you the night when Raha called me, I'm like, nah, I told Raha what happened, right? And I'm mad. And Raha just took it real lightly, man. He's like, don't worry about it, man. Ain't nobody going to make you famous, right? And like I say right there, I was mad. It wasn't a laughing matter. You know what I'm saying? But the brother Amir had went to Rashid Barber and spoke to Rashid personally and explained the situation to him, right? And they had their interactions, man. They know what the dude is on. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that situation played out like that. And I never returned to that situation. And like what we
should not.
But it's like what we mentioned before about what we learned in Usul Thalatha, right? About having patience upon what you're calling to. Because in this path, man, you're going to be harmed, man, and stuff is going to be thrown your way. And some people got the stomach for it, man. See, me, on the other hand, I'm still from the streets. I'm just a little refined because I got a nice woman, man, that keep me calm. You know what I'm saying? But certain stuff just ain't for me, right?
Right.
I can take you correcting me when I'm wrong. Wallahi, I ain't got no problem. Listen, just a sidebar. You remember that time when we was on the yard, man, and you, Nafi, Abdullah, like a whole bunch of y'all gang up on me, man, out down the yard, man. Like, yo, man, you wrong, man. You can't do this, man. You gotta let other people help you, man. You can't do everything. You remember that night?
Yeah, cause you went on a vicious suicide. It was something, and it was so. I think that we was upset because you put yourself in harm's way when we yeah, it was something wild like that. Because you used to go, you know, your alter ego used to be Samuel L. Jackson.
Mm-hmm. So my point of mentioning this is, like, after y'all came with that admonishment, man, I didn't resist y'all because looking back at the situation, I was wrong, right? Yeah. So I don't have a problem with that, man.
Right.
I don't like for people to accuse me of stuff that I know I ain't do, man.
Right.
And one thing you know about me, I love the Muslims, man. I want good for the Muslims, period, man. All over the world, man. I want good for all of the Muslims, man. And so sometimes it may be that I'm naive and I feel like, you know, I can contribute, man. Maybe some good will come out of a situation. And so I approach it that way. And then when I know, regardless of anybody else, these, I know that when I approach this situation, it was for the pleasure of Allah, man. It wasn't.
Right.
So, yeah, that ain't for me. You see what I'm saying? And when you recognize something, man, I like giving dawah to my wife. She listen to me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. That's one of that sidebar. That's one of the blessings of having man. The righteous or the striving spouse, man.
Yeah.
they'll sit down and listen to what's even on their head. They just be like, oh boy. But mashallah, they be so attentive. And they, look, and their noms be so soft and sincere. Nah, nah, nah. And they gonna hit you, they gonna hit you with the alhamdulillah, subhanallah, Allah Musta. Next you know, you being cooked by Mo, you done stood up.
And then, you know, my wife's favorite line is, why are you so loud?
You saying stuff thrice in the middle of in the middle of a conversation. You say do I, you take a nail, get back up. And I called myself a couple of times just giving a khutbah to my Zao Jack. And she just be like, I already know. Bless her heart for her patience. Man, but back to that situation though, man, you know, and not to just beat the dead horse, man, but it's hard to do have honest dealings with treacherous people, man.
No, man.
And so to prevent from resorting to treachery yourself, you just had to remove yourself. You know, and
but see, the hardest part for me in terms of removing myself is just not being in the atmosphere, right? Because here, where I'm at, the Muslims is already like in the minority, right? And so when I was down in Virginia, man, that's our life, yo. Like yeah. The brothers that I know from there, like that's our life, yo. How you supposed to frequent that man's shit, man? That's how we used to be, man.
Yeah,
and listen, we had a real life coffee gang down there, huh? That was our thing, man. The coffee pot stayed bumping over there, man. We would come in after work or whatever, fire the coffee pot up, sit down, kick it. Brothers would roll out, go home. Sometimes we in that thing, man, to the wee hours of the night, man, just drinking coffee, kicking it, man. And so that's what I left when I left from Virginia. That kind of atmosphere of being around the Muslims. And then when I come down here, not only are the Muslims small, right? So you think in that situation that will build a stronger bond. But when you get with the people of ill intentions, man, people of innovation and corruption and stuff like that,
yeah,
man, the house is beloved, man.
Ain't that the truth, man? It's nothing, man. When the law favors you, with a beautiful community, man, and that strong brotherhood, man, it's a blessing, man. But you can't force the man that round peg into a square hole.
Nah. And I used to, you know, you always hear about the people that seek fame, that want to be known, and it's a lot of stuff that comes with that, man. And so, like you say, when you get around the sincere people, man, it really has an effect on you. And likewise, when you get around them off the wall people, man, it really just have you shaking your head, man. But yeah, that's what that situation is, man.
Man, so, you ever thought about investing and getting together with a couple of brothers and establish a musala? Cause that's something that I feel like we don't do. We feel like, you know, for some reason we need like this ultimate permission somehow, or we don't want to compete, and it's not for competition sake, but the more massages, the better, you know.
Yeah, in one respect, man. Cause like I said, when I first came, that was what I was saying to the people, man. Like, you know, they opened this thing up, man. So the more, like you said, the more the da'wah is spread, man, the more good that the people are receiving. And any place where you able to call, then you should be willing to do that. But in terms of setting up, sometimes I think what it really comes down to is you may not have the financial means to do it. Like in some instances where the money is available, then that's what they do. They'll just go and rent a house or rent a storefront or something like that and establish that as the most seller. You've seen that many times where people break off. But what allowed them to really break off is they had the means to go and get something else. And so down here, it's not as fortified. It's not as close as, like, say, D.C., for example. It's spread out down here, right? And so where you might have 6 or 7 Muslims, that's the closest thing. And then if you go off and you 45 minutes to an hour away, people might like the idea. But again, you just find it's just you and your wife or whatever. So you stuck in between the rock and the hard place of going. And with me, with that particular situation, it's better for me to not go at all than to go and risk fighting or getting into arguments and having your name drugged. Because when I first got down there, I probably was down there a month or so. And the imam called me to the side and was like, "Do you know this brother? This brother say you and your wife aren't really married. Y'all just shacking up." And I'm like, "Who said that?" He says, "This brother said that." Like, man, that dude don't know me, right? And plus, I got married in Wilmington. I got a witness. You know what I'm saying? Not only the my wife and her son was the wali, and the imam and everything. I got a masjid full of people who witnessed it. I don't even know this guy. What is he talking about, right? Well, all these rumors and stuff that just people just pull out of no. I don't really like all that stuff. Like, that ain't for me. And so, like I say, I like giving da'wah to my wife. And so, I follow the ayah. What Allah says, save yourselves and your family from a fire that's a fuel of men and stone. And so, you know, that's what I do. Where I work at, they have a nice masjid and a nice community. And so, you know, whenever I can, I do it like that. But in terms of that one where all that fitna broke out at, nah. Mm-mm. Nope. Not your kid.
I know, and it's funny that you mentioned about your wife. Because she's blowing me up. Oh my so,
God. We are in here, man. And so until the next time, we get together, man.
But side note, we did tell the people, man, that they would be eavesdropping into conversations, man, because I just looked. I was like, man, this we doing a marathon.
Yeah.
And we
before we close, man, we'll mention that you can follow us on Instagram at Coffee and Benefits with Ayub and Redbeard. And likewise, you can follow us on Twitter at Coffee and Redbeard as well. So, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.